Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about how olive oil has a nutrient that can help prevent brain cancer. That's from the University of Edinburgh. Then we're going to take a look at how traumatic experiences can reshape the gut bacteria from UCLA Brain Research Institute. And then we're going to look at how when you eat a meal is very important, because if we eat at irregular times, that can throw a monkey wrench into the master clock in the brain, and why it's important you eat at the same time each day. How zinc can hold the key to fighting liver disease from Westmead Institute in Australia. And also today we're going to do some audio clips, one from Edward Snowden. And I think that's very important that we hear what he has to say. He's got some interesting things to share, and we'll take a short clip from him on that. And also, how many times have you heard this investigation, that investigation, we need an investigation, we don't need an investigation, when we didn't have an investigation on Clinton, the Republicans were outraged when we had an investigation didn't have an investigation on Trump, then the Democrats were outraged. So we're going to have an overview, a very succinct overview from the Andrew Klavan, who will give us what we should know about these investigations. Also, Children's Medical Safety Research Institute has come up with what's the difference between vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. It's only a minute long, but boy, is it enlightening. And then the majority of our program today will be addressing the president's decision, and I'm assuming that he had his Secretary of State, who also, Mr. Tillerson, who was one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful person in the oil industry as chairman of the board of ExxonMobil, and as a result, a person who his entire fortunes were made on fossil fuels. And there was a time when fossil fuels was essential to our growth, the Industrial Revolution. But today, we don't want to be with fossil fuels. Now, we'll never be completely fossil fuel free, but we should make a shift. And if we don't, then we're facing some very dire outcomes. And when I was listening to the different left and right discussions on the getting out of the Paris Climate Accord, none of them touched the essential issues. We will. In fact, today we're going to be having Professor Emeritus Guy McPherson on our program. Guy was the first person that I interviewed who actually had the courage to give us the truth unedited. If we couldn't handle it, that was our responsibility. And I have since then had over 15 highly respected climatologists come to similar conclusions. They may be off by a year or two or three, but some are even more dire in their predictions of the end parts of our civilization as we know it within the next 9 years. Some say even sooner, some say a little longer. So why is it you have 15 who have access to all the same materials as 2,000, and yet the 2,000 other scientists are being very optimistic? A lot of it has to do with funding. A lot of it has to do with being ultra-conservative when it comes to sharing information with the public. They don't like to scare the public. Well, it's time that we got scared. It's time we grew up. And so we're going to have a long conversation on that today. But we always begin with something that's positive, upbeat, and that can help everyone. Health. A compound in olive oil, we're talking about organic, cold-pressed virgin olive oil, can help prevent cancer developing in the brain. That's what this optimistic study shows. Research shows that oleic acid, O-L-E-I-C, the primary ingredient in olive oil, has been shown to help prevent cancer-causing genes from functioning in cells. And the oily substance, one of a group of nutrients known as fatty acids, stimulates the production of a cell molecule whose function is to prevent cancer, causing proteins from forming. The study team says that it's too soon to say whether dietary consumption of olive oil may help prevent brain cancer, but their findings are very positive and point towards that. And that's good news. Scientists from the university analyzed the effects of oleic acid on cell molecules known as MRR7, which is active in the brain and is known to suppress the formation of tumors. And they found that oleic acid from olive oil prevents a cell protein known as MS12 from stopping production of MRR7. In this way, olive oil helps support the prevention of brain cancer. The study was published in the Journal of Molecular Biology, which is funded by the Medical Research Council. So that's good. We know that traumatic experiences early in life can have really devastating consequences later, some obvious, some not so obvious. I once spoke with a person who was having a hard time in relationships. Evidently, this person, who was academically advanced, career-wise very solid, had a very good career, making a lot of money, but couldn't hold a relationship and was always blaming the other person. So I said, all right, in the last 20 years, how many relationships you've had? Oh, about 10 or so. Okay. And they were all wrong. They were all at fault. Yes. So then we started to discuss, because it was really about her health, and we started to discuss things that happened earlier in life. And first she denied that there was a problem in her upbringing, and then she acknowledged that she lived in a house where the father was dominant and didn't spend time with her as a kid. Mother did. She was raised primarily by her mother. And that she experienced a lot of traumatic abuse, not physical abuse, but traumatic abuse. But she couldn't see how that impacted her, because after all, she went to Harvard, she graduated, you know, top of her class in law, and she was successful, and she was a white glove attorney on Wall Street and making, you know, a lot of money. And I said, that's the outside. Everything in life is about what's inside, our inside reality. So when she had a series of studies done, showed that she did not have positive bacteria in her body, she had multiple infections. And so in a process of creating good, healthy bacteria, what we call the microbiome, we were able to reestablish normal, what is called homeostasis, or intestinal balance. And then through a process called tapping that one person invented, Henry Grayson, a psychologist, very skilled man and very innovative, and I've seen this tapping work, a person is able to overcome early life experiences through this guided imagery and tapping exercise. And within 2 to 3 weeks after going through this cleansing, detoxing, and lots of good bacteria, and then dealing with her early life trauma that she'd been living in denial of. Oh, that was back then. No, nothing is back then. Everything that's ever happened in your life, you carry every second of your life. It's just, do you allow it to be impacting you or not? Most of the time, this is subconscious, so we're not even conscious that this is impacting us. And after she did this, she was completely normal, totally healthy. Now, this is interesting, because that was 7, 8 years ago. This is from UCLA Brain Research Institute. And by the way, there is no disputing the scientific soundness of the whole brain-gut connection, because it's been replicated so many times by so many different people. But it also, I'm sure for the average listener, it may sound a little odd, might even science fiction-ish. But then again, remember, if you listened, I broke a story on ABC Network when I was on there, radio network, of how they were going to be putting chipping people in the future. And people thought that was kind of foolish. Well, now they're microchipping dogs. And in Australia, they're also doing experimental chipping. It'll happen first to senior citizens, then it'll happen to children, all for their best interests. After all, wouldn't it be nice if your child is chipped, and if they're ever kidnapped or lost, lose their way, you can immediately find out where they're at. And the same way with, mom and dad who might not have full memory, they'll put a really nice facade on it. But you've got to understand, with the nanotechnology today, they can put 5,000 pieces of information on a single chip so small it is half the size of a grain of rice. They could not only monitor you, they could control all electronics in your life. Everything from your cell phone, television, banking, travel. And now, and I will boycott, I won't fly on JetBlue now because of this. And I have flown extensively in the past because now they're going to do iris scans, retinal scans. So now when you go up to hand your ticket to get on the board the plane, you have to stand in front of a machine. The machine will take a picture of your retina. That's right now. That's not the future. So everything, every single thing I've told you is going to happen now is actually happening, including I was the first radio show in the United States to do a series on the deep state. When? 31 years ago. We went back into our archives, and I've been doing a lot since then because it's getting worse. But anyhow, as UCLA would tell us, they're in effect, you're asking the average person to think about this. You've got trillions of tiny organisms that live in your gut. They chew up your food. They help maintain good digestion. But also, now here's the hard part. So let's wrap our mind around this together. The bacteria in your gut also can impact what you think and how you think and what you say. That's correct. That is the content of my thoughts might at least be partially determined by what I ate for breakfast. Did I eat a healthy breakfast, an unhealthy breakfast? Did I take my vitamin C or not? So what I consume will impact the bacteria, which impacts my brain. I understand that this is a little much for some people to accept, but it's true. And so, strange as it may seem, though, it's also the case of our science finally catching up to our idioms. Without realizing it, we've been talking about the link between the brain and the gut for a long time. Ever had a gut-wrenching car ride or a gut instinct about something? I felt it in my gut. Or butterflies in your stomach? In less colorful terms, the stomach and the mind really do talk to one another. In one study, for example, tentative mice that received gut bacteria transplants from braver ones became more fearless, exploring a maze with less hesitation. So strong is the microbiome's impact that some have deemed it the second brain. And recently, a team of researchers found that our guts may harbor evidence of difficult life experiences many years after the fact, changing everything from how we digest food to whether or not we have to have a normal bowel movement or whether we have to take an enema. And why? Are you eating fiber? Yeah, I'm eating fiber. Are you taking your juices like apple juice, vitamin C? Yeah. And yet you can't have a normal bowel movement. That's where you have to look at early traumatic experiences in life and how that was impacting you then. And even though you've grown to forget about it, the cell never forgets anything. So that's how it works. So this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Microbiome, and the author's analysis of microbiomes of a group of students with irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, a fairly common chronic condition marked by pain in the stomach and gas and indigestion, but also very common among students or high-level achievers. Those students that get the straight A's, those students who are always working towards improving their learning capacity and testing. In effect, they're not having a normal childhood. They weren't allowed to go out and play and come back later. They were being coached, tutored, nurtured by parents who needed them to succeed, even if it meant not having a childhood in the process. So now they're in a highly competitive environment. They go to Harvard, there's 5,000 other students just like them. And you see more of depression, anxiety, and irritable bowel syndrome than in just normal kids. Quote, this is from the study. Is it possible that the signals the gut and microbes get from the brain of an individual with a history of childhood trauma may lead to lifelong changes in the gut microbiome. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So take your time at life. Everybody else is rushing and frenetic and hypersensitive and overly committed to responsibilities. Pull back. Let all the balls in the life that you're juggling drop and only pick up those after you've had a respite that you need in your life. And watch your gut create good bacteria. And also from the University of Surrey, which is in the United Kingdom, we know about delayed mealtimes reset the body clock. Now, what's that mean, lay language? The human body runs according to a roughly 24-hour cycle, and that's controlled by a master clock in the brain and peripheral clocks in other parts of the body that are synchronized according to external cues, including light. Now, researchers reporting in the peer-reviewed journal Current Biology have found that at least one of those clocks can also be reset based upon what time a person eats breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The findings suggest that regular meal times will help you keep your clocks on time. Quote from the study, a 5-hour delay in meal time causes a 5-hour delay in internal blood sugar rhythms. We think this is due to changes in the clocks in our metabolic tissue, but not the master clock in the brain. End quote. So researchers knew that the body's clock system and metabolic control were tightly linked and to the circadian rhythms. Let me give you another example of how this works. Let's say that you normally go to bed at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, but you get tired before then. If you're at a computer or watching television, you find that about an hour before you normally go to bed, you start kind of eyes closing a little bit and open back up again. You're watching television and you open your eyes and it's 5 minutes later. The body's telling you you're now in a catabolic stage, which is breaking down, cleansing, detoxifying, and then you go to sleep. And you generally go into a deep sleep, and that rapid eye movement sleep that is deep is about an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes. And that's where you get most of your healing. Now, in the morning, around 4 a.m. to 5 a.m., you start going through another cycle, and that cycle is called an anabolic cycle, meaning building up. You've got energy. You want to go. You want to get up. You want to, and you need fuel for that. But if let's just say that you decide one night you stayed up past 11 o'clock, so it's no longer 11 o'clock, it's now midnight, and suddenly you try to go to sleep, and you can't. You're wide awake. You're wired. And you think, well, I'm normally dead asleep, yeah? You've passed the clock, and the clock has shifted into an anabolic mode instead of being in a catabolic mode. So people who have nighttime work, boy, is that bad. You shorten your lifespan, you throw off your hormones, you throw off the release of melatonin from the pineal gland, which protects your brain and your body and is protective of your neurons. So a whole lot goes wrong when you stay up. Now, if it's once in a while, fine. There's no harm done. You can rebalance yourself. But what if it's chronic? What if you get used to doing a lot of emailing late at night? That's very harmful. So, eat on time, sleep on time, and you're going to add years to your life. And finally, from Westmead Institute in Australia, they found that zinc can help fight liver disease. Now, we have all kinds of liver diseases, and from hepatitis B and C, all kinds of alcohol-related damage, cirrhosis of the liver. So this creates chronic liver disease. And they found that zinc blocks the inflammatory activity of the IFN3. And that's important. In effect, zinc is the fire extinguisher to the flame that's about to get started. And with progression to liver cirrhosis, in viral and non-viral liver disease, boy, having low inflammatory markers is important. So no matter what condition you have in your liver, make sure you're getting 15 to 20 milligrams of zinc a day. And that was published in Nature Communications. Now, I'm Gary Nall, and that's the latest on health and healing. And again, everything we share with you comes from the peer-reviewed literature, mainstream science, And why do I do that? Because when I first got into the field, we were led to believe that there was no legitimate arguments on behalf of anything alternative, whether it was organic food or jogging, meditation or mindfulness, body-mind healing, having more fruits and vegetables in the diet, taking vitamins. All that was denigrated, attacked, and ridiculed for decades. It proves now that they were wrong about everything. They were wrong about synthetic hormone replacement therapy. They were wrong about DDT and Aldrin and Heptachlor. They were wrong about Agent Orange. In fact, every single major decision made on behalf of public health has been wrong. Spraying the public with DDT as a kid, I got sprayed as a kid in the country. I remember, oh, don't worry about it. You know, keep the mosquitoes away. Well, we didn't have mosquitoes at that point, but it didn't matter. Once they start a program, it is indiscriminate. Then the program and keeping it going becomes what's important. It's like government bureaucracies. Whether or not they serve the public in the right way or not is irrelevant. Just it becomes this feeding the cancer that's metastasized. And so I look back and I look at all the great men and women, the Crusaders, the Adele Davises, Carlton Fredericks, and I think, wow, boy, did they take a beating. Not once in their careers were they ever given acknowledgement for having been on the right side of truth. The media was constantly wrong about everything. The legislation was wrong. All the federal agencies were wrong. The scientific community was wrong. So today, I always begin the program with what they, the scientific community, has agreed is quality science, meeting the standards for peer review. And guess what? Science today is the best validator of what historically has been alternative constructs and concepts. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, back in New York City. In fact, I'll be in Central Park with our coaching staff, John Q, and all the other men and women who have run marathons, walk marathons, and are there as a public service to help you get into shape. Be there at 9 o'clock, ready to do a workout, 90th Street and 5th Avenue. That's the entrance to the park, and we'll get you into shape. All right? And it'll be fun. We've done this now. Well, the first one I started the Natural Living Room Running and Walking Club on July 4th on the boardwalk, 41 years ago. We're going to have a little clip, a short clip, very short clip from Snowden, because he says something I think is relevant. Listen to what he has to say.
Then I'll ask for questions from the floor. Is there any part whatsoever, however small, of you that thinks the world has become less safe because you reveal this information? Edward, did you hear that?
No. I did. No. And the good thing is we don't have to rely upon my attestations. We don't have to rely upon my belief. We've seen it in the United States, within its own politics. The president of the United States, who came out so strongly against me in June of 2013, when I first came forward, by January of 2014, said, although he could never condone what I did, this conversation has made us stronger as a nation. That's the president of the United States in his State of the Union address. I agree with him. The courts have reviewed these issues and found that these mass surveillance programs had been operating for more than a decade, and they had never been authorized by law. They found that they were almost Orwellian in scale. They said they were likely unconstitutional. The Congress of the United States, the third branch and least functional of it, that has, forgive me, become not so reliable in recent years, has actually passed the first substantial surveillance reforms since the 1970s in the United States in response to these disclosures. If they were so harmful, right, if they were dangerous, we would not see this kind of political consensus. While there is indeed still a political effort to retaliate against me as a person, I think we all understand, and even those in government who are most embarrassed by these disclosures, recognize that this is something that was a necessary action. Even the former deputy director of the National Security Agency, forgive me, executive director, Rick Leggett, who oversaw the investigation into me, who oversaw the investigation into these disclosures to journalists, said that this was something the public needed to know, and the NSA should have told the world about far in advance of being forced to do so by journalists.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, questions. Right, there's a lady on the left there in beige.
All right, I just wanted that little short piece of this. I'll play other pieces on upcoming programs. So let me put this into a different perspective and see if this is reasonable and makes sense to you. And if it does, use it. If it doesn't, discard it. We are at a point in our history where those who bring us truths that we're not willing to bear are demonized, ridiculed, marginalized, or even criminalized in their actions. Snowden's only criminal activity was leaking classified information. But more importantly, the people that he was showing were doing illegal actions for at least 10 years or longer before this were not punished. So those who perpetrated crimes against humanity, eavesdropping, massive data collection, nothing happened to them. So the perpetrators of crimes against humanity in the American public remain in positions of power. Those who expose it are the ones then that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Donald Trump believe should be punished. Now, if you took this further, that would mean that Rachel Carson should have been incarcerated because she exposed the dangers of DDT. It means that my guest coming up in 3 minutes from now, Professor Guy McPherson, who's in Belize, should have been completely put away in prison for life because he is willing to tell us information that the rest of the scientific community should be or is fully aware of, but he is the one of a handful of 14 to 15 people who are wanting to tell you the truth without dressing it up, without trying to in any way disguise its impact. Simply say, here it is, friends. If you're not mature enough to handle this, remember, nature doesn't care whether you're ready for a tsunami, heat waves, hurricanes, tidal waves. It doesn't care. It's going to happen. If all you care about is don't make me feel bad about bad information, tell me something good. What did the Kardashians eat for dinner last night? If that's how we're distracted, even the people on the left have heroes, unfortunately, in my personal opinion, who have betrayed them, privatizing leading assets of major, in fact, Pacifica. The number one private asset was privatized, corporatized, monetized, $77 million, and not a peep. It's a truth that is too painful to bear that, you know, this goddess of the left is now shown to be human and vulnerable to the same vagaries and same insecurities and the same overreach as people that would be criticized, rightly so, in Wall Street or in any other institution. Everywhere we look, we're seeing that we can handle the truth if it's not something that we can control the outcome of. So that's where we're at. So we wouldn't have anyone like Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader then should be in prison because he told us about the pollution in our water. He told us about the pollution in our air. And he created acts of Congress, though he was never elected official, to get us these protections. Today, in today's climate, virtually every single one of the whistleblowers through history would then be demonized because they brought us information that the public was not willing to accept because it would have meant that the people in power, both policymakers and opinion leaders, were wrong, were vile, were self-serving, were serving the interests of others for some monetary, political, or ideological reward. That's how screwed up we are today. Are we a mess? We're beyond mess. We're beyond almost irredeemably, irrevocably conditioned to believe in a monotheistic reality. And whatever that reality is, we don't change it. And that's why only 1 million people out of 170 million voted for Jill Stein. She had the truth, a truth that was unblinking, but we couldn't handle that, and that's why. At the end of the day, it wasn't Jill Stein that was at fault, or the other independents like Rocky Anderson and others. It was the people not mature enough, open enough, and vulnerable enough to see the truth when it was about to hit them. Instead, all we want are investigations. And people are so damn confused about which investigation is going on that I decided to bring Andrew Klavan on to simplify it all. Now, this is a really simple understanding of all these investigations. Please listen, and then we'll go to our guest.
Democrats who called for the firing of FBI Director James Comey are shocked and appalled by the firing of FBI Director James Comey. The Democrats say that Comey's firing will undermine the investigations for which he should have been fired. In order to examine which Democrat claims are cynical political fabrications and which are hysterical conspiracy theories, and which are cynical political hysterical theories about fabricated conspiracies, let's examine which investigations might be affected. The FBI, as we know, is investigating whether the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to expose the Democrats' emails. The Senate, meanwhile, is investigating whether the Obama administration investigated the Trump campaign for the collusion that the FBI is investigating. The Judiciary Committee is investigating why the Attorney General failed to investigate Hillary Clinton's attempt to avoid the FBI investigation into the Attorney General's failure to investigate her emails to the Democrats, which the Russians hacked in an attempt to interfere with our election, which the Senate is investigating in an attempt to find out if the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians' hack of the Democrats' emails, which the FBI is investigating to see whether the Obama administration was investigating the Trump campaign. The House Intelligence Committee is investigating whether the House Intelligence Committee overstepped its bounds in investigating the Obama administration's attempts to use the intelligence community to investigate the Trump campaign's collusion with the Russian hack into the Democrats' emails, which the FBI is investigating in order to find out whether the House Intelligence Committee overstepped its bounds in investigating the Obama administration. The head of the House committee, meanwhile, has stepped down pending an investigation. At the same time, many in the press are investigating why the press never investigated the Obama administration's investigation of the Trump campaign, but continues to investigate the Trump administration's investigation into whether the Obama administration investigated the Trump campaign, which is now under investigation in the Senate, causing several investigators to call for an independent investigation into the House investigation of the Senate investigation of the Trump administration, which is meanwhile investigating the Obama administration, which was on a yacht in the Bahamas at the time, dancing to the musical stylings of Drake's Hotline Bling. Mr. Drake is not currently under investigation. Now, to be clear, an independent investigation into the Senate investigation of the House investigation of the Obama investigation into the Trump campaign could expand the investigation into an investigation of Russia's investigation of the emails that were under investigation by the FBI, which was in turn under investigation by the NSA, who have been investigating everybody in a surveillance program that's still under investigation. If that were to happen, there would no doubt be calls for a full investigation into all the other investigations. So, it's easy to see that the firing of James Comey will have to be investigated to ensure it doesn't in any way curtail the important business of government, which is investigating. Just thank God the government's not actually governing. Then we'd all be in real trouble. Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is the Andrew.
All right, so it should be very simple now that we've made that very uncomplicated. Let's now go to Belize. We're standing by as Professor Guy McPherson, a professor emeritus of natural resources at College in Evolutionary Biology, University of Arizona, specializing in forest research, energy decline, and climate change and economic consequences. He also taught at Texas A&M University and University of California, Berkeley. And he is also the author, along with Carolyn Baker, of Extinction Dialogues, How to Live with Death in Mind. He also co-hosts a radio program, Nature Bats Last, heard every Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Hour. His website is GuyMcPherson.com. Nice to have you with us today, Guy.
Dr. Null, it's a pleasure as always. Thank you.
When we look at the consequences of President Trump's decision to not just walk away from the Paris Accords, though legally that would take several years, but it also sent a big you-ha-ha to corporate America, the Koch brothers and others, that don't worry about your pollution. A, we're not going to do anything about it. B, we control the EPA, and the EPA is not going to do anything about it, and it's no longer going to be adequate to protect the public's water and air and land, soil. But go ahead and complete the task of causing rejuvenation in American economy by firing up more coal power plants with clean coal. And behind all this, the American public is either outraged but not clear about the details. You have the details. And I would like for you to give us your overview now of what the president, his advisors, the leading scientists at the National Academy of Sciences in Washington, which is the body that the government uses for its experts on all different matters involving life on this planet, what none of them are willing to acknowledge of how bad it is, how close we are coming to the abyss, and yet we're not doing a damn thing about it as a government, as states, and only individuals are becoming aware and doing something, but not a whole lot. Tell us the truth, as you always do, undiluted and unedited. The form is yours.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. It seems to me that the train left the station, 40 or 50 years ago, and the train left the trestle, fell off the trestle, and is plunging to the canyon in the bottom. Maybe that only happened a few years ago, but it still happened. And now finally, much too late, now 18 years after Noel Brown, the director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Program, said we have 10 years to solve this problem. That was in late June 1989. Years after all this has happened, people are starting to take interest in the failings of the government. They have put with respect to climate change, it's pretty clear that we have triggered abrupt climate change. It's underway. It's unstoppable. It's reversible. They don't call it abrupt, irreversible climate change. We can have to delay. It can be reversed. Quite the opposite. We are ahead of your turn for human extinction. And, like I said, the train fell off the trust behind it, gnashing on the way down. Pushing people away to make sure I have a better seat on the angle of our demise. None of that is going to do any good. It's time to address the outcome of the system we've all been living in for our entire lives. It's time to deal with the fact that there are adverse consequences associated with pursuing the next buck the last 250 years.
Guy, we're having a technical glitch. Do you have another phone line that our engineer could call you from? Or could we try to have you hang up and reconnect you so we can... I understand we're with limitations because you're in the jungles of Belize. But I'm going to ask my engineer. I have plenty to share until you get back on the line, all right? So we're going to get Guy, who's down in the jungles of Belize, so it's not an easy interview. But we'll get him back. Here's today from The Independent, quote, humans are ushering in the sixth mass extinction of life on Earth, scientists warn. Extinction rates of birds, mammals, and amphibians are similar to the five global mass extinction events of the past 500 million years that probably resulted from meteorite impacts, massive volcanoes, and other cataclysmic forces. Humans are bringing about the sixth mass extinction of life on Earth. Then, according to the current issue of Nature magazine, the most respected scientific magazine in the world, quote, mammals, birds, and amphibians are currently becoming extinct at rates comparable to the previous five extinctions. When cataclysmic forces such as massive meteorite strikes at supervolcanoes wiped out vast swaths of life, including dinosaurs. The growing human population, which has increased 130% in the past 50 years and is set to rise by more than 10 million in the coming future, increases the demand for resources as we become wealthier, is ramping up the pressure on the natural world. Tens of thousands of species, including 25% of all mammals, 13% of all birds, are now threatened with extinction because of overhunting, poaching, pollution, loss of habitat, the arrival of invasive species, and other human-caused problems. Now, they say it's not inevitable. My guest says it is. About 14 to 15 other scientists say we've passed it. As Guy McPherson just said, and I apologize you couldn't hear me because he was breaking up, that the train has left the station. So that's crucial to understand. Now, let's go back now and see if we have him back connected. Guy, are you back there now? Not yet? Here's some other things that we have not yet said. And I would like for someone in this audience to please send these to Tucker Carlson. I believe that Tucker is a sincere person. I disagree with him on many issues. But he's not afraid, I believe, to change if you share compelling evidence with him that is fully documented. Well, what I'm sharing now is information for everyone in this audience that is completely scientifically supported to show you why we cannot wait on any government to say, yes, I'll do something or no, but it could be voluntary and it could be 20, 30, 40 years from now. No, we need action right now. Why? Tipping points. Once something tips, there is no power on Earth to bring it back. The melting of the Arctic ice cap, this tipping point is already passed. And it's Guy's belief that when the Arctic is completely free of ice, so there is no ability for the sun rays to hit the ice and bounce back harmlessly into the atmosphere, it'll go right through the water, heat up the bottom. Methane is over, it depends upon which scientific metrics you use, but it could be anywhere from 21 to 70 times more powerful as a negative influence on the atmosphere, CO2, carbon dioxide, that you're going to have that heat up. You're going to have the tundra. You're going to have an area in Russia and the northern boreal forest larger than the continental United States, all heating up that had been historically frozen. So that's going to create a feedback loop. The more the ground heats up, the more methane is released. The hotter it gets, the hotter it gets. The more the ground warms up, the more methane is released, both in the ocean and here. So that when we are completely free of Arctic ice for a year, then the countdown starts, and that countdown clock is devastating. And Guy, I was just mentioning, thank you for getting back on with us here. I was just mentioning that once the Arctic is completely free of ice, that's probably our single most severe feedback loop and tipping point. Could you explain what will happen, the likely outcome, once the Arctic is free of ice, which is in the process of happening? How long do you think that'll take? And then what will happen to the clock for survival on Earth after that ice is gone?
Well, the U.S. Naval Postgraduate College conducted an analysis in 2013, and they concluded we would have an ice-free Arctic in 2016, plus or minus 3 years. I'd say we've dodged four bullets so far. I can't even imagine there will be ice in the Arctic this year at some point this summer. If we use the weekly trends analysis, the conservative weekly trends analysis, it seems that we're headed for an ice-free Arctic the first week of August of this year. Bear in mind that typically the lowest ice level in terms of extent in the Arctic occurs in September, approximately occurring September 20th or 21st. So this year it seems that we're headed there early August. Or if we take the less conservative daily trends and forecast into the future, that gets us to an ice-free Arctic on about July 4th. So I would suspect that somewhere between the 1st of July and the 1st of August, we'll have an ice-free Arctic for the first time in 3 million years. That is, for the first time, with Homo sapiens or even the genus Homo on the planet. The likely outcome of that? Methane spewing from the relatively shallow seafloor of the Arctic Ocean at an accelerating rate. No reflectance, no albedo from the Arctic ice. Instead, the blue ocean absorbing the sun's energy for the last half or so of the summer. So I think an outcome of that, one very likely outcome, is the 50 gigaton burst of methane predicted by Natalia Shikova and three other colleagues at the European Geophysical Union meetings in late 2008. That alone would add 1.3 degrees Celsius to the global average temperature. That would almost certainly cause the collapse of civilization due to the ability to grow grains. That means we're headed for an additional 3 degrees Celsius or so as a result of the absence of global dimming. Bam, we're at 6 degrees Celsius above the 1750 baseline in as little as next spring or summer from now. So it looks really, really awful from where I'm sitting.
Okay, now there's some other things as well. That's just one. We have Greenland becoming ice-free, which could raise the, not completely ice-free, but so much ice pouring off of it because of warming, that in and of itself it could raise the sea levels by feet. Right now as we're speaking, any day now, probably within the next week or two or three, the Larsen B ice shelf, which is would be the largest iceberg ever recorded, it is the size of the state of Delaware. It's over 130 miles long. It's over 300 feet wide. It's over 3/4 mile deep. Is about to break. And when it breaks, that it's backstopping the glaciers in Antarctica, which have a very high degree of slant, meaning they're about 12 degrees more or less at an angle. So as it melts, that glacier is going to be pulled right into the water. Now, right now, the Larsen B shelf, Larsen C shelf, is what's backstopping it. In other words, someone's trying to open the door, and the Larsen B shelf is pushing to keep the door closed. If the person pulls away, the Larsen B shelf breaks and just becomes a free-floating iceberg. That will not increase water in the Atlantic, the ocean, because it's already in there. It's like when ice melts in a glass of water, you don't get more water in the glass because it was already a part of the full weight and mass of the water. So we won't have an increase in the sea level because the Larsen B ice shelf breaks. But all that calving, the breaking off that you've seen in pictures going into the ocean, will be unstoppable, and all science agrees upon that. There'll be massive, unstoppable, and then it creates a feedback loop. So that can raise sea level already. And yesterday, I don't know if you're aware of this, I just heard about this today. Evidently, it was one public official, might have been the mayor, someone important in the political apparatus of Miami, talked about how the buildings are being adversely affected. Some are sinking. I sold my home of 15 years in Miami, moved out because I started seeing every single month in the morning seaweed from the night before's tidal surge come in further and further up until it was on the bottom of the buildings. And I said, this is not good. This water is going to go down into the soil, destabilize this. And that's exactly what's happening. They put in a $220 million pumps. They're pumping the water out of the west side of Miami Beach into the bay, and it circulates right back around into the Atlantic. You're taking water from one side, putting it in the other. It's a temporary stopgap. They're bringing sand in because all of America's beaches are losing their sand. There's no longer any sand in America, and you need concrete and sand to work together. So you're going to have, I predict within the next 3 years, Miami Beach will be a ghost town. And the whole east coast of Florida are going to be buildings destabilized. And then there goes your economy. There goes your tax base on property taxes. There goes hundreds of billions of dollars in lost income, and no one's doing a damn thing about it. It's not even on talking points. Then you have the disintegration of the West Antarctic ice sheet, and that could raise the ocean by 16 feet. We have the loss of glaciers. 80% of all glaciers in North America are gone. The fresh water from Arctic and Greenland collapsing the Gulf Stream. So when the Gulf Stream taking warm water from the south, taking it north, when that stops, and it probably will, you're going to have a complete radical European. I'm talking about Spain, Greece, England, Ireland, France, and clear up to a whole different temperature, and you're having the melting of the permafrost, the tundra releasing vast quantities of methane, desertification, the Arctic ozone, and here's something no one's talking about, Guy. If they continue this stupid, irresponsible chemtrails of putting chemicals in the air to try to reflect back the sun's rays, which is not working, they're also endangering the ozone layer. And I've been looking at the latest ozone reports, and they are precipitating what will be another ozone hole. And you have an ozone hole, nothing can live inside there. It'll burn a person's skin, give them a third-degree burn. You go out and that's with an ozone hole, it'll burn a plant, it'll kill a tree, a shrub, even a cactus, and not a word anywhere about the ozone. And then loss of our rainforest, especially the Amazon and New Guinea, and the loss of the boreal forest, especially, that's a major tipping point. So could you address those as well?
You know what I love coming on your show about, Gary, is that usually I'm the most pessimistic person on the line when I'm doing an interview. But not when I'm with you, I feel perfectly Pollyanna-like. Because you're so well-informed, and you know what's going on in the world, and you put it right out there. Yes, yes, yes to all of the above. Ozone is huge, and already holes in the ozone are opening up. And I call them holes. It's really just a thinning of the atmospheric ozone. But they're opening up all over the planet. Every place I go on tour anymore, people come up to me and say, the sun feels hotter to me. Why is that? And you've just described why that is. It's because the ozone is thinning, and people can get third-degree burns just being outside. The sun doesn't feel hotter. It actually physically is hotter on your skin than it used to be. And so we've triggered these self-reinforcing feedback loops already that are contributing to, for example, the thinning of the ozone. Atmospheric ozone. And myriad other factors. You know, you gave us a short list there, and it still took a few minutes to go through the enormous number of horrors we have already kicked off that are already happening. And, you mentioned Miami is a classic example. The worst case scenario is not sea level rise per se. It's saltwater intrusion into the domestic water supply. So now we've got salt water intruding into the well water, the fresh water that they're pumping through everybody's taps. And 3 years before we have a ghost town in Miami might be a little optimistic. I'm not trying to trigger a run on sales of realty in Miami. I think it's too late to even think about that. But I just don't see how we can continue destroying our only home, and people have this expectation response that things are getting better and we can use technology, the technology that has already failed us, to fix the problems that are already underway and the predicaments that are already underway. So I think you've nailed it. I can add very little to what you said here.
Well, on next Tuesday, I'm going to invite you for a full 1 to 2 hours on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 p.m. because I want to get into the feedback, positive feedback loops, which is not positive because they actually exacerbate climate change. I want to get into the charmy or fast feedback loops. I want to get into the albedo or the loss of land and sea ice. I want to get into the charmy or slow feedback loops, including the carbon-related feedback loops. And I've got all the other feedback. I got 51 feedback loops to talk about, and not one of these, not one. So we're going to deal with all this next week. But I'm sorry for the poor connection today. We'll look forward to having a little better connection on Tuesday night with my guest, Professor Emeritus of Environmental Science, Dr. Guy McPherson. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Western Union man, send a telegram to my baby. Send a telegram, send a telegram, whoa, send a telegram to my baby. This is what I want you to say. Want you to tell her that I'm all alone. I tried to call her on the phone. Tell her I'm in misery and think she's avoiding me.
And if the telegram don't do, send a box of candy too, and maybe some flowers. Tell her that I missed her for hours and hours. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Hurry up, send a telegram, man. To my baby, you hear what I say? Oh, Western Union, man. Send a telegram, oh, send a telegram to my baby. Western Union, man. Hey, send a telegram, oh, send a telegram, send a telegram, oh, send a telegram, man, to my baby. This is what I want you to do. Listen, tell me, have you got a boy you can send? Well, this is what I want him to do. Put him on his bike right away. See if he can get my message through. Ain't it tomorrow, but mail it right away. I want the girl to know that I missed her. Something like yesterday. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Whoa, send a telegram, man. To my baby. Do you hear what I say? Oh, Western Union, man. Why don't you send a telegram? Whoa, send a telegram to my baby. Western Union, man. Send a telegram. Oh, send a telegram. Send a telegram, send it right on to my baby. Do you hear what I said?
Happy day when Jesus walked.